No gravy fountain yet, but we have to see as people show up throughout the day. They often arrive with unexpected contributions to Thanksgiving. So there's also a contingent this year which is pushing for some sort of Thanksgiving Day parade. So I did see the a go-kart that was decorated to look like a slice of pie and some other thing involving a bunch of bicycles welded together. So we have yet to see what comes of that. But the day is young for us here in the Pacific time zone.
I understand you're on Pacific time, so you're really starting early. I remember your geodesic dome of pecan pie, which was, I thought, a great idea. Charles, we wish you all a very happy and very inventive Thanksgiving.
Thank you.
Thanks for talking with us.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Now, we're going to be back with more of your calls in a moment. The number is 800-537-5252. Or you can join us online. Go to splendidtable.org or shoot us an email right there. But right now, we're going to be joined by Chef Jose Andreas. Now, he does the Made in Spain series on PBS, and he also has a flock of restaurants in D.C., which has meant that he has been dubbed the Boy Wonder of Culinary Washington. Jose, it is good to talk to you.
Happy Thanksgiving. So happy to be with you today.
Oh, happy Thanksgiving to you too. Now, are you going to be cooking today?
Cooking is the only thing we know in this house. My daughters very often tell me, Daddy, can we be off today from cooking? It's funny, no? Because I know other families, cooking is like one day in the month that is a celebration. Here, I guess my daughters tell me, well, Daddy, I mean, we cook every day. Can we one day take a break and go to a restaurant for a change? Anyway, but they love to be around the kitchen and messing up and helping Daddy and Mommy.
Oh, this sounds great. How many people are you having today?
Well, we began with 12 2 days ago. Well, like 2 weeks ago, we were 12.
Right.
But, you know, at this moment, we went all the way up to 27. How this happens? Well, Lynn, I came almost 20 years ago to America. My daughters think I am a pilgrim because I came in the Spanish Navy sailing first time.
I see.
And when I arrived first time through the Ellis Island under the beautiful Verrazano Bridge, the Estatue of Liberty on my left, and I arrived in Manhattan, I always had someone that opened their home to me, their hearts. Uh-huh. And I cannot help it. I have to keep that tradition. So every time someone tells me, well, I'm alone. Oh, well, you don't come over. By the time I lost count, and this morning my wife and I were like, okay, exactly who is coming? 27. Which we are very happy. That's the spirit of Thanksgiving.
It is really the spirit of Thanksgiving. What was your first Thanksgiving like?
Well, my first Thanksgiving in 1991, I didn't have a clue what Thanksgiving was. So I didn't really plan for anything. I didn't really know so many people in New York that at the time that will tell me, join me. So just happens that what I really do remember is that I was walking in the streets fairly early in the morning. I'm a guy that loved to walk, and I saw this huge celebration, the Thanksgiving parade. And to me, this was fascinating. So let's say that I didn't. My first Thanksgiving really was not the proper Thanksgiving of joining a family and enjoying the tradition of being all around a table.
Yeah.
But to me, just the spirit of seeing that parade and the balloons. And that to me, I don't know, was the first impression I had. But since then, you know, I make sure that I always had Thanksgiving well in my little apartment or well in my home today with 27 people. So, you know, my first really Thanksgiving was that, the being in the street and seeing all the big parade and the balloons and all the happy people coming from all the states of the United States used to celebrate. So that's my big first kind of impression. Wow, what a party.
I you realize, of course, they did that parade to welcome you.
Well, I was thinking about it because you're going to laugh, but at the very beginning, I mean, you learn English in Spain and you learn, British English. And at the very beginning, everyone will be telling me, you're welcome, answering to my thanks.
Yes.
And I always thought that they knew that I was an immigrant, a foreigner, that just arrived, because the you're welcome, I never saw it as the answer to thanks, but you are welcome into our country, not your thanks are welcome. And me, I always was like, man, these people really, they know my accent, they know I'm a faraway guy, and they're telling me, you are welcome into our country. And anyway, it took me like one more year to realize that, well, they were not really welcoming into the country, but just welcome my thanks. So it's so funny how one little phrase can have such a different meaning, depends who is analyzing that meaning.
Yeah.
Me, I always want to believe that when someone is not only thanks for thanks, but is so much deeper. Is thanks for being there with you. You're welcome for sharing your time with us. You're welcome to be part of our family. This is what I really love.
Jose,
yes.
Would you like to join me in answering some callers' questions?
I think we should.
Oh, yes. Okay. You can reach us 800-537-5252 or send us an email, splendidtable.org. And you have to, of course, know, Jose has been cooking professionally for a very long time, has great restaurants, so he's the guy. Let me see who's on, Jose. Amy's calling from Portland, Oregon. Amy, what can we do for you?
Good morning.
Hi, Amy.
Hi there.
I am in my library, surrounded by thousands of books, with my daughter Inez next to me. So if you ask any question I cannot answer or lean, well, we'll look into the books, and hopefully will show up.
Thank you, because I'm here with some scribble notes, Jose. This is going to really be thank you.
I'm calling to find out about cooking this 22-pound turkey, breast side down.
What you mean? You want to know if you should?
If I should, and yes, if it's worth it, if it.
Yeah.
But you know, if it might make the breast not so dry.
Okay, Jose, what's your take? Breast side down. Breast side up.
I mean 22-pound turkey. I mean, let's face it. In traditional Spain, We use a baby pig, roast it upside down during the first hour and a half, and then we turn up the pig so the skin gets crispy. In the case of birds, in the case of a turkey,
these
belief that the turkey is going to be beyond crispy, it's not really true. Even in the Peking duck Chinese style, it's very difficult to have a skin that is really, really crispy. On the overcooking, well, you know, I don't think you're going to gain much by doing this. You're going to have to turn the 22-pound turkey when it's very hot, which sometimes is complicated. If you are not very savvy in the kitchen, you're going to end burning yourself or something is going to happen. I will not recommend it. It's a very good technique given by Dr. Kimball, our great friend, Mr. Kimball, from Cooks Illustrated,
who
recommend sometimes to make sure that you put ice with the breast upside down. You put ice, a couple of ice bags for 2, 3, 4 hours to make sure that the cavity and the breast underneath kind of becomes very cold, a lot colder than the legs themselves. So once you put the turkey in the oven on paper, the breast kind of will cook slower or will take longer time to achieve certain heat. But you know what? Sometimes we go through such a complicated process to make that perfect turkey that we miss the point. I will just go in the traditional way. Probably by now you have plenty of recipes on the web, plenty of books. Put it on the oven at the right temperature. I would say lower is always better than higher, 275, 300, and just enjoy your family, enjoy your time, and watch the turkey through the beautiful window of the oven once in a while, so the turkey doesn't feel alone in that cavernous kind of cavity, in that kind of hot room called oven.
All right.
So, Amy, you're home free.
Thank you very
You're
much.
You're home free. Okay. Have a hey, have a great turkey.
All right.
All hey, good
right.
luck.
We have Edward calling Jose from Carmel and Carmel, Indiana.
Yeah.
Edward, what can we do for you, sir?
All right. This morning at right about 8 o'clock, my mom comes up and says, hey, I need you to run to the grocery store to get some stuff. And I say, okay, sure, can do. And she says, we need a big roasting pan. And I said, well, we have some big stuff. What do you need? I need 15 by 17. And I look at her and say, there's no way that they have any. So I start running around, and I'm still out running around, and we have nothing. There's no dice on getting any of those. So what do I do?
All right, so you're talking about the turkey has to go into a large roasting pan?
That is what the what she's cooking today. So what should I, can we cut it in half? Or I'm the young guy. So
you make sure that so large of a pan can fit into your oven? Because
yes.
This will be, I will check this first.
Uh-huh.
Because it's
Made
not
sure.
the first time I see someone buying a pan so big that then they get home and then they say, oops, it doesn't fit.
Yeah, but you know.
So this is, I know it's obvious, but because this has happened to me.
Absolutely.
And on paper, I am a professional. So I'm trying to pass you those unsuccesses in my culinary trips. So make sure, okay? Make sure that that pan and the turkey fit in your oven.
Well, all right, but how about the idea that since you don't have the pan that's large enough to do the turkey whole, I've got a scathingly brilliant idea. And, Jose, tell me what you think of this. And, by the way, this is not an original idea. It's been done forever.
You have a brilliant one. Well, one good way is this. We know that even a turkey technically is almost like a semi-perfect ball, that if you will cook it whole on paper, you will achieve perfection at the cooking temperature. But anyway, this never happens. Why? Because the breast and the legs are two different animals.
You are
one.
Going in the same direction, I think, that I was
you
thinking.
You and I, we are.
Yeah, we are one.
I listen
one.
To you all the time. So you know what? I learned from the pro. So I will separate the two legs from the breast. I will start cooking then the legs in one smaller pan and the breast in another. This way, on paper, you are supposed to have beautiful legs, nice and roasted, with certain gelatin that is going to melt through the legs, all the fattiness that the legs always have, and the breast, which on paper is slightly drier. You don't have to cook it so long. And then when you slice the breast, it's going to be juicy, full. I mean, your mouth is going to be inundated by those beautiful flavors of a good turkey. That's what I will do.
That's exactly what I was thinking, Edward. And I think you're going to have a great turkey. And then you can slice it in the kitchen, arrange it on a platter, and nobody's going to know that it wasn't a whole bird.
You got it. Put a picture of a whole turkey right in the middle somewhere, and so people see the whole turkey. But this way is going to be probably even better.
Edward,
Thanks
happy
so
Thanksgiving,
much.
Sir.
Hi, Edward. Good luck with the pen.
And Jose, I'm going to let you get back to cooking for those 27 people. A wonderful holiday.
It's 28 by now. You
oh, it is.
Pass me the new. It's another person that is alone in town. 28 by now. People of America, you can join me.
You know what? Don't say that too loud. You may have all of Washington, D.C. at the table. Jose, thank you so much.
Happy Thanksgiving to you.
Thank you, sir. And to you. Call us 800-537-5252 or send us an email. Just go to splendidtable.org. We've got Patricia on the line from Michigan. Patricia, what do you want to talk about?
Well, good morning. We are going to deep fry a turkey.
Yeah.
And we're at our daughter and son-in-law's, and he's never done this before, and he had some questions. And we did it one other time, but I wasn't part of
the process
that was frying turkey. So anyway, I was in the house cooking other things. So a couple questions: do you tie down the legs and the wings?
You tie down the legs and the wings, but you have to do it with wire.
Oh.
Yeah, and you don't necessarily have to tie down the legs and the wings. Now, does he have a special pot, an actual big deep pot?
Oh, yes. Yes, it's a 30-quart turkey fryer pot.
Right,
yes.
And there should be a sort of clamp that you put on the turkey to lower it into the fat.
Yes, uh-huh.
Okay.
It's a three-prong clamp.
Right. If you tie the legs, you can I'm hesitant to say you could use a cotton string, but I'm always hesitant because it could burn at the temperatures that the turkey is going to cook.
Okay.
So what I would love to see you do, you could even take a coat hanger, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But here's the thing. You need 3 to 4 minutes to the pound. The turkey should be as close to room temperature as possible, which means you want it to have been out about an hour and a half, 2 hours.
Okay.
You
okay.
don't want to stuff it.
Okay.
That would be a disaster. Yeah. And you want it as pat it as dry as you can so that you're not going to get an eruption. And that's the basic idea. And when it comes out of the deep fryer, okay, what you want to do is let it rest for maybe 15, 20 minutes. Let all the juices settle, and it's going to be fabulous. But he should know, all the cautions. You want to have thick oven mitts. We had a group last year that were playing touch football or basketball while deep frying. Thank goodness no one was hurt, but the turkey ended up in the middle of the driveway. Not in the pot. So I would suggest no athletic activity around the bird.
Good, good. I have a question, too. In different recipes online, I noticed that they suggest one that you heat the oil to 375, and another one said 350, and someone said 300, and then
No. Here's the thing. You really want to heat the oil to 400.
400.
Yeah, but let me explain why. Because once the turkey is lowered in, the oil's going to go down, and you want to have the oil at around 350 for the frying process. Mm-hmm. You don't want to do it too low because what happens is it doesn't really fry. The fat just gets sucked in.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Good. I have a question also about gravy.
I'm
having a difficult time with gravy because there's no pan drippings.
Well, what you can do is brown up some of the giblets and the neck and the wingtips of the bird. All right? And if you have any chicken or whatever around, do that, throw that in. Put it in a big skillet, chop up some celery, carrot, and onion. Brown that in some nice fat, whatever you want, but I'd use olive oil. And then take some wine, all right, red wine or white wine, pour that over it, boil it down to nothing, do that again, and then take some broth and add that and let that simmer for about a half hour or so. And then you can thicken it with what's called a slurry. Just stir some flour and water together so there's no lumps. Pour that in and let it boil until it has silky looking and it has no raw taste. Very light on that flour. You don't need a lot of it. You just want a little bit of thickening. And that's going to give you a pretty decent gravy.
Good. Now, I have...
Patricia, I'm really sorry. Patricia, I have to cut you off because we have a huge lineup here. Okay?
Oh, thank you.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving.
You take care, Patricia.
Thank you.
Bye. You can reach us, 800-537-5252. On to Paul in Miami. Paul, what do you want to talk about?
Hi, Lynn. Thanks for being with us on Thanksgiving.
You are more than welcome.
Hey, every year I have always like to put my turkey in a turkey bag just for ease of it.
Mm-hmm.
But in the back of my head all the time is this guilt saying I should not be cooking a turkey in plastic. I stay away from microwaving in plastic. And
guilt? Isn't guilt awful? I mean, yeah, I know what you mean. It's like I say I shouldn't be cooking the bird the way my grandmother did. But go on.
Yeah, but the thing is that, I don't want to be spending my afternoon... I love to cook, so I'm cooking a million things, and I don't want to be spending my afternoon, basting every 15 minutes. Is there an alternative to the turkey bag, which has always just allowed me to put it in the oven and go swimming and do whatever on, have a holiday rather than...
Have you brined the turkey by any chance?
Oh, no.
No, you didn't brine the turkey. Okay. There's a couple of things you can do. First of all, you could do a slow roast. 325, started 400 for 20 minutes or so. I like it breast side down, no matter what Jose said. I put some celery, carrot, and onion on the bottom of the pan as a rack.
Yeah, I used to do that. Okay.
Yeah, and also that means the pan juices are going to, develop more flavor. And
right.
So the point is, though, you could do it breast down for 2/3 of the time you're cooking the turkey. Baste it only when you think about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like that.
And then flip it over so it browns in the breast, and you want it to be 160 degrees at the center of the breast, 160 to 165, 30 minutes rest. This is the magic key to make any turkey taste better, no matter how you cook it. Never slice into it right after you take it out of the oven. Give it a 30-minute rest, and then do the slicing, because it'll finish cooking and all the juices will settle and it will be delicious. You will be just fine. And you know, the plastic bag, that steams the bird. This is going to be a roasted bird. This is going to be even better.
I like that. And you know, what's so funny is for years I was cooking my, you know, just anytime I would roast a chicken, I was doing it breast side down without even thinking, just like, hey. And I had a friend over one day. He was like, why are you cooking your chicken breast side down? I said, what are you talking about? It's just like the way it fits, the way it goes. You know, no one ever showed me differently. And it was always so great. So, hey, a 15-pound chicken. It's,
turkey, I mean, 14 minutes to the pound. Is it stuffed?
No, I don't, I'm not going to stuff it. I never do.
13, 14.
I just put like, I chop up like a lemon or two, and I stuff it with a lot of, you know, like quarters of onions and whatnot.
Right,
because that
right.
gives a lot of flavor inside the turkey.
I'd say 12 to 14 minutes to the pound. And you'll check it. You know, you'll check it with an instant reading thermometer.
Yeah, so two-thirds at a time, you said, and then turn it around. Turn it.
Yeah, just flip it over so that it can brown on the other side.
I got it.
And
hey, thank you.
Baste it with the pan juices when you think about it.
Yeah, will do.
Okay, Paul, enjoy the turkey.
Lynn, thank you.
You
love
are
it.
Welcome, sir.
Bye.
You can reach us 800-537-5252. We've got Aaron on the line from Fort Collins, Colorado. Aaron, hi. What's your question or got a story for us?
Happy Thanksgiving, Lynn.
Thank you.
I've been cooking a turkey for about 15 years using the 1959 Woman's Day Take It Easy method.
Yeah.
And I have a question about that.
What's the method?
Well, the method, the article is hysterical, and it talks about having a full night's sleep, sister, after you put the turkey on, having given it a lard facial. But my question is, you put it on, and then it's supposed to cook 30 minutes a pound, and it's supposed to cook all night, and you just get up and turn the oven off and let it sit. And then an hour before dinner,
yeah,
whatever that is, depending on your
all right.
poundage.
Aaron, stop right there. Okay, the alarm, the food police. I'm putting
exactly.
A, yeah.
That's my question.
All right. What temperature is it at overnight?
275 to 300.
Well, you could do it, but I have. Do you already have it in the oven?
Oh yeah, we've done it this way for years,
and it's been okay.
Mm-hmm.
And
nobody, no one's died.
No one's died. You know, this is good. This is good. Then it's working. It's just generally that very low temperature for that length of time. You can possibly, you know, the center of the turkey doesn't cook all the way. But I think it should be okay if you guys have been eating it.
I've been using the thermometer as well. So I know it's getting at least to, I think you just said 160, and it's getting higher than that.
All right, that's good then. Then you're okay because that's pretty safe.
So okay. Even if the stuffing sits for a couple hours before you actually eat.
No, the stuffing, you've got to keep that stuffing cold. You can't let that stuffing sit. It's going to become really toxic.
Okay.
So you have to yank it out of the bird, chill it, and then reheat it.
Okay.
Or bake it separately today.
Uh-huh.
All right, which is probably too late.
Okay, we'll have to pull it.
Well, Aaron, thank you, and good luck with the stuffing.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
You really can't let stuffing sit out, guys. It is sort of turns into ptomaine gulch, if you understand my meaning. We're going to be back shortly with your calls. Line up, guys, 800-537-5252. We have Joshua Wesson coming in, so think your wine questions. He's our wine maven. We're going to be talking wine for the holidays. We're going to find out what he's opening. I'm Lynn Rossetto Casper. You're listening to a special Thanksgiving broadcast, Turkey Confidential, from American Public Media.
I'm thankful because you care. I'm thankful for dreams we share. When you came along, I was born anew. That's why I'm thankful to you. Oh, I'm thankful for happy hours. I'm thankful to all the flowers that smiles up at us from underneath the dew. Darling, I'm thankful to you. You seem so far above me each time you said you love me. A rainbow shoots across the sky. I've made quite a catch, and though I'm not your match, I'll do my best to satisfy.
Hi, it's Lynn Rossetto Casper with Turkey Confidential from the Splendid Table and American Public Media. It's Thanksgiving triage for cooks and non-cooks all across the nation today. The lines are open for you. You can reach us at 800-537-5252 or join our live chat at splendidtable.org. And we're also posting photos of your own Splendid Table. So get to that website. Show us what's going on in your kitchen. Well, this is the day that practically breeds stories. And have you ever noticed that they're always about the odd things and the things that go wrong, never about the perfection? Well, this year, Station WFYI in Indianapolis asked their listeners to share their Thanksgiving stories as part of the station's Spirit and Place Festival. And one of those listeners is on the line. Larry, happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving to you too, Lynn.
So tell us your tale.
Oh, well, I'm not much on eating turkey, so one year my mother-in-law asked me what I wanted for Thanksgiving dinner, and just jokingly I told her, oh, how about fried bologna and sauerkraut? And she looked at me kind of strange. This is a couple weeks before.
Uh-huh.
So Thanksgiving Day comes, I go in there, and I smell the turkey cooking when we get to the house, and the girls are all excited because of the turkey and the pie and all that stuff, and I'm resigned to the fact that, well, I'm going to have my normal turkey and dressing and all that stuff.
Right.
She calls the dinner table, and I go in and sit down, and we say a grace. And she gets up and goes over to the oven, opens it up, pulls out two plates, brings them over and sets them on the table, one in front of her and one in front of me. Fried bologna and sauerkraut. That was one of the best Thanksgivings. I think I remember that, and I'll probably remember that for the rest of my life.
Well, so she made turkey and dressing and the whole feast for everybody, and then for
yep.
you, she made fried bologna. And to not have you feel badly, she ate it with you. I love this.
Well, when she was a kid growing up down in eastern Kentucky, in Jenkins, Kentucky, right near the Virginia border, they had a lot of bologna and stuff back then.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, it sounded good to her, too, said she hadn't had it in a while. So,
is she still with us?
No, she died a little over a year ago.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that. She sounds like quite a lady.
She was. She was really good to my wife and my daughters.
Well, thank you for sharing the memory.
No problem at all. Glad to do it.
Well, have a wonderful holiday. Sauerkraut and bologna or no sauerkraut and bologna?
Absolutely.
You take care, Larry. Thank you.
Thank you, Lynn. Bye-bye.
It's a great story. And proof once again that it is not the food that makes the moment. Of course, I do know someone who might argue that it is the wine that makes the moment. Well, once again, our favorite wine wit, Joshua Wesson, who is Senior Director of Wine, Beer, and Spirits at the Great Atlantic and Pacific Tea Company, joins us. Josh, it is so good to have you back.
Oh, I'm so excited to be here. And I just came back from watching the floats. They actually get blown up on my block. I mean, it's not why I picked my apartment, but it's very exciting to see, you know, the big guys go from little mats to being these giant floats and then taken away. I was very impressed.
I think this is sort of, you know, this is the firsthand look at Thanksgiving beginning, right?
Indeed.
Yeah. You know, I'm just curious. You heard our discussion about sauerkraut and bologna. What would you pair with sauerkraut and bologna?
Well, I mean, those are the sommelier's twin nightmares. You know, wine stewards go to sleep in mortal fear of ever seeing those two things on a plate. But I will tell you this, the dominant taste of sauerkraut is going to be not the funkiness and earthiness of the cabbage, but it's really the tang.
Mm-hmm.
And whenever you see tangy elements in food, it doesn't matter whether it's tangy sauerkraut or tangy dressing on greens. You really need to find something in a wine that reaches out and shakes the hand of that acidic food, something
right.
that's complementing it, something that's similar, because whenever you have basic tastes that are the same in wine and food, they sort of mute one another and tamp one another down and almost cancel one another out to delicious effect. So I look for wines that are really lip-smacking, high in acid, that have no oak to get in the way of that luscious, mouth-watering acidity. And sometimes I'll add scrubbing bubbles in there in the same way that beer is beautiful with, you know, sauerkraut on a hot dog.
Well, yeah.
You can have sparkling wines that work beautifully with sauerkraut. And bologna's easy because that's just kind of salty and fatty. So you need something that's going to be a contrast, unlike with the sauerkraut where you found a wine that was similar, something that's going to unzip all that fat and salt. So you just look for the most, you know, wickedly refreshing, mouth-watering, bubble-scrubbing thing that you can stick in your maw and go for it from there.
So this would mean something like a sparkling Vouvray or you know, shall we say an inexpensive champagne or bubbling wine? Not cheap, just inexpensive champagne?
Well, you know, there's like I have so many friends that are bubbleheads, and they live to find the next great fizzy, foaming bottle of whatever it is.
Add me to that list.
And champagne is great, of course, but you know, they're always on the search for the next cool thing. You mentioned sparkling Vouvray. That's kind of a cool off-the-radar screen bottle of bubbles. Everybody knows about Prosecco, but 10, 15 years ago, Prosecco was completely off-the-radar screen, too. I love Cavas from Spain, and most recently I've been getting into sparkling wines from Australia because they're really lovely, lilting, lyrical bottles. They're never expensive. The best ones come from the island of Tasmania, which is just south of Australia itself. And they're just incredibly good wines. I love them.
This is great. Folks, 800-537-5252. Wine questions for Josh. For instance, Josh, we have an email from Tim. Oh, this is the question you hear constantly at this time of year. What is the difference between cellar temperature and room temperature?
That's an excellent question. And probably the greatest tip that I can give everybody listening out there is when you have red wines, you want to make them taste better. Stick the red wine in the refrigerator for half an hour to 45 minutes, and you'll bring the red wine down from room temperature. Most of us live in rooms that are 72 degrees, more or less.
Right.
Bring the wine down to about 60 degrees, which is what cellar temperature really is, 55, 60. And that's what room temperature should be for red wine. When people talked about serving red wines at room temperature, they really meant sort of a chilly, drafty room or a cellar. And you can make any red wine in the world, whether it's a $5 bottle or a $500 bottle, taste better if you serve it a little bit below 72 degrees.
This is great, and this may be sacrilege, but if there's no room in the fridge, because I can imagine what mine looks like, snowbanks are good places to chill.
If you have snow like they do out in Washington State now, that would work.
Yeah,
And I hope nobody's listening who really knows me professionally, but you can stick a bottle of wine that is at room temperature in the freezer for about 15 minutes, and it'll come down. But here's, you know what we all do? We all forget that one time when we stick it in there until we open it up and we see it's exploded all over the place because the wine expands and forces the cork out, and it looks like...
And the thing is that since the freezer is sealed shut, you never hear it. And the next time you open the freezer, it's lovely because you've basted it with wine. We have people lined up with questions. We've got another email here from Kelsey calling from Columbus. And Chelsea emailed, she wants to use some good Cabernet in the gravy, or should she open a cheaper wine?
Well, you know, one of the best rules of thumb that you can apply to cooking with wine is that you'd never want to cook with a wine that you wouldn't want to drink. So it's not a question of whether it's less expensive or more expensive.
Right.
Just as long as you like to drink it, and frankly, you should be drinking it while you're cooking. I mean, it's what Julia Child taught us all. You've got to take a little bit of wine when you're roasting the chicken. And it just makes the whole cooking process taste better. But you should never cook with wine that's turned bad or the so-called cooking wines that have been adulterated with salt. You got to really put something in the pan that you would drink, because what happens when you cook with wine is that the first thing that goes is the alcohol. It evaporates, and then the water in the wine reduces, and you're left with a concentrated set of tastes. And if you don't like the tastes when they're in the glass, you're really not going to like them when they're concentrated, because you've taken them to a higher level of yuck. But I always cook with wine that I drink, and I always drink the wine that I'm cooking with. And I try not to drink all the wine before I finish cooking.
This is usually a good idea. We've got Nan on the line with a question. Nan, welcome.
Hi, Lynn.
Hello, Nan. What do you want to talk about?
Okay, I want to talk about dessert wines and what type of thing can you serve after a large meal that you've eaten slowly over, you know, the course of an hour and 15 minutes, and you've been imbibing wine along the way. And is there anything bubbly that's appropriate? And when should you serve a dessert wine? Are there certain criteria around that, or can you do it by itself before dessert or with dessert? In general, what kind of a dessert wine would I serve with a large meal, such as Thanksgiving?
Well, that's a great question. And dessert wines, of course, are so named because they go with desserts, usually, and they can be served as dessert. I like to, at the end of Thanksgiving, after the pie and after the cake and mm-hmm. after all the sweets, I bring out an Oloroso cream sherry. And it is not quite as super sweet as a Pedro Ximenez cream sherry or a really sweet Sauternes or a Barsac or what people normally think of as dessert wines. And it has this beautiful nutty acidity, mm-hmm. and it's got this sort of chocolatey, malty flavor to it, and it smells like beautiful plums and prunes and raisins and toffee and coffee, and it's just a fantastic way, and you don't
sounds
eat much
awesome.
Of it, to end a meal. And it guarantees that all your relatives and friends will remain as amusing after the meal as they were during the meal.
Sounds wonderful. Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
You have a good one, Ned.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
You know, the other thing I think that's kind of, which I like at the end of a big meal, is something like a Moscato, which is a lighter wine, and it's very, very fruity, but it's something that feels a tad frivolous after all those very serious, you know, kind of stern reds that we tend to get into with the holidays.
Well, you know, I love Moscato, especially from Asti up in the Piedmont, which is very low in alcohol. You could serve it to lunching orthodontists, and they wouldn't screw up their afternoon cases. It's about 5%, and it's the perfect antidote to richness. It's a great contrast to the richness of the meal, and it tastes like a little bit of summer. When you have it at Thanksgiving, you know, on the cusp of winter, it's just a perfect way to grab onto a little bit of sun if it's not sunny outside of your window. But I also love to serve white wines more than reds at Thanksgiving, because you brought up, you know, the richness of the reds. And it's
kind
of like a myth. There, I was thinking about this, you know, when we were talking about the show earlier. What are some of the myths that surround wines at Thanksgiving? And one of the great myths is that reds are invariably better than white. But if you were to try every red and every white in the world with whatever you have on your Thanksgiving table, I'm sure that the vast majority of people out there would prove to enjoy the white wines more than the reds, because you need refreshment. There's so much fat and salt and richness. You got to find something that's a good contrast. And if I was shipwrecked on a desert island, and you were cooking Thanksgiving dinner for me, and I could only have one bottle float up on shore, it would be white, and it would probably be a Pinot Gris from either Alsace or from Oregon. I just love those wines. They're universal antidotes to just about everything that goes on the table. That sparkling Shiraz, I think you can take mm-hmm. on any food you could ever come across Thanksgiving.
Well, let me tell you, Josh, you produce those wines, and I would cook Thanksgiving dinner for you on a desert island. It would probably be roasted clam basted with sand gravy, but I would do that for you for those wines. I love Pinot Gris, especially the Oregon ones. We've got someone who's been waiting patiently. Mary Pat's calling from St. Paul. Mary Pat, hi.
Hello.
Do you wish to speak to me or to Joshua?
I have a question for Joshua about wine. My aunt passed away this last year, and we've been cleaning out her house, which she had for over 30 years. And we found a lot of white wine, but we also found a huge bottle of what appears to be incredibly inexpensive Asti Spumante. And I was wondering, do you have any ideas of what we could do with that? I don't know if it's the besides maybe drinking it.
Well, you could enter the witness relocation program.
She used to serve it every Christmas Eve with strawberries in it, and we would kind of grin and drink it. And now we have the bottle, but we don't know what to do with it.
Well, you know, Asti, you know, in point of fact, Asti is a town in the Piedmont, and when Lynn and I were talking about Moscato d'Asti, that's sort of the grown-up version of Asti Spumante. It's a little bit less sweet, a little bit less fizzy than Asti Spumante, and a little bit more serious, but not so serious that you can't smile. I mean, there are smiles in both Asti Spumante and Moscato d'Asti. Asti Spumante, is, you know, when it's fresh and young, is a very delicious, silly little drink that goes beautifully with all sorts of fruit, especially strawberries. So, you know, your relatives were insanely smart and spot on when it came to the matching. But that wine doesn't age. So what I would do is either chill it, open it, and not expect anything from it except the memories of where it came from, or never open it at all and treat it as sort of like a symbol. And you can have an homage to relatives that have come and gone and look at that bottle and buy a new bottle of Asti Spumante and then, you know, come up with a fantastic toast.
Thank you very much. Have a lovely Thanksgiving.
You too.
You too, Mary Pat. You know, I remember, Josh, the very first time that we ever spoke on the air, I tossed a question to you. I think I took you completely unawares, which was, what wine would you match to Twinkies? Do you remember that?
I do.
And you said, without missing a beat, Asti Spumante.
Absolutely.
So if anybody's doing fried Twinkies for dessert this Thanksgiving or any time, get yourself a bottle of Asti Spumante. We have Tim calling from Indiana. Tim, hi.
Hi, how y'all doing?
We are doing just swell, sir. Would you like to talk to Josh?
Because
I have a feeling that that's the reason you're calling.
Yes, it is.
And my feelings are not hurt, Tim. I just want you to know.
Okay.
All right.
Josh, I want to ask you a question. First of all, I tear down old buildings, and I found several bottles of wine in an old building I tore down. And they're still good. They're not that old. They're probably 5-6 years old.
Wow.
How cold can I get that wine and still be able to drink it? Just so I don't freeze it?
Are you talking about white wines or red wines?
There are several different colors. There's white, red, and there's also purple.
Right. Well, what I would do with the wines that are white is just stick them in the refrigerator, not the freezer. Let them stay in there for 2 or 3 hours, and they'll be at the proper serving temperature. Some people like to drink white wines a little bit warmer than refrigerator temperature, but not quite as warm as a room or even cellar temperature. It's really up to you. It's just a matter of choice. The red wines I would cool off a little bit. Like I mentioned before, you can take any bottle of red, whether you found it in a building 5 years ago or you bought it from a store 5 minutes ago, and put it in the fridge for 30 to 45 minutes, and you will have a better tasting bottle because it will focus the fruit and make the alcohol seem less apparent, and just make the wine a more delicious expression of whatever it was meant to be.
Okay, what about purple? I found some purple, like grape wine.
Purple?
Made from Concord grapes.
Well, you know, you're speaking to my heritage because my first bottle of wine was made from Concord grapes. It was Manischewitz, and it was a wine with a message, and the message was, don't let Moses have the corkscrew again.
Don't do what?
don't let Moses have the corkscrew again.
Okay.
But I will tell you this, you know, there's nothing wrong with Concord grapes being turned into wine, not just jelly, but wine. That wine is probably going to be very dark and very sweet.
Right.
And believe it or not, it's incredibly good with peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. I'm not kidding. I've done peanut butter and jelly and wine tasting.
I've heard that before, yes.
And I just like sipping it on its own or with a bowl of fruit. You can even make some sorbet out of the Concord-based wine by putting it in an ice tray and freezing it and then just chopping it up. You know, the Italians call it granite, but it's just a sort of cheap and easy and delicious way to take wines like that and turn them into something more.
Now, could I chill that really cold and drink it?
Chill it cold, because the colder a wine gets that's sweet, the less the sugar tastes, the less you can...
sugar.
Yeah.
Exactly, sense the sugar. So it makes the wine taste better when it's super cold.
Okay, that's what I wanted to find out. Now, sure, thank you, folks. You all have a good, happy Thanksgiving.
And
happy
you,
Thanksgiving.
You too, Tim.
Well, you have a great day.
You too. And Joshua, you have a great day. And thank you.
Thank you. I'm going to drink a glass of Asti Spumante and think of you, Lynn. Sounds Twinkie, but I'll be thinking
of you. I'm shipping you a Twinkie.
I love you. Have a good one.
You too. Joshua Wesson is Senior Director of Wine, Beer, and Spirits at the Great Atlantic and Pacific Tea Company, and he's a regular on the Splendid Table. Well, call us, 800-537-5252, or send us an email. Just go to splendidtable.org, and also join the chat there, and show us some photos of what's happening on your Thanksgiving. Let's see, we've got Tim calling. Tim, what's up? What do you want to talk about?
Happy Thanksgiving.
Well, thank you, sir.
I want to talk about mashed potatoes. I kind of hate the last-minute rush of mashing potatoes in the pots chaos and making gravy. Is there a way to make them ahead and still get a decent result?
There is no mashed potato I have ever known that you couldn't reheat. But there's, if you're doing the real, are you doing the one without the lumps, you know, with the ton of stuff in it and all that kind of stuff?
Just the regular.
Okay.
Yeah, straight up, because the kids, you know, don't want the roasted garlic and all the other.
I hear you. They are purists.
Okay.
Right. Take a metal bowl. All right. Take a saucepan that the bowl fits into, so it just sits on the top of that saucepan and maybe sits down in it a couple inches. Put a couple of inches of water in the saucepan so it's simmering. You're making a double boiler.
Right.
And do your potatoes ahead. Then what you do is put them in the metal bowl, cover that with foil and seal it, and you can put it over simmering water, and that'll heat it up. And then every once in a while with a spatula, like a rubber spatula, just, you know, go in there and turn it over. It'll stay creamy and light and delicious.
Great, and I can do that as far ahead as I want. I can
you
start
can do
now.
It. Yeah, well, the thing is, it's going to take about 45 minutes for them to get hot. So
right.
You can make the potatoes now. When are you eating?
Oh, later on this afternoon.
And you're in Vermont, I guess.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, later on this afternoon. The potatoes can wait for a couple of hours, certainly in the fridge, and then you can put them in there and give them about 45 minutes to an hour. Just
great.
Check the water in the saucepan so it doesn't dry off and burn the pot.
Terrific.
All right. You are going to have masterful mashed potatoes, and you are going to be much more cool and whatever in control.
Exactly.
When you sit down.
Okay. Thank you.
You have a great day.
Thank you very much.
Bye, Tim.
Bye.
You can reach us, 800-537-5252. We've got Sarah on the line from Ardmore, Pennsylvania. Sarah, hi. What do you want to talk about?
Hi, Lynn. I love your show. Thank you for having me on.
Well, thank you, ma'am.
Of course. I want to talk about sweet potatoes. I'm making oven-roasted maple sweet potatoes.
Right.
And my question is, when do I add the maple syrup? Because I don't want it to burn, but I want the potatoes to be cooked.
Okay. So, tell me, what state are the potatoes in right now? Are they peeled? Are they chunked? Are they, you know, are they pureed?
They're peeled, chunked, and just totally raw.
And they're sitting in a shallow pan roasting away?
Yes.
Okay. First of all, give them a little bit of oil or butter so that they'll
okay.
get a little caramelized. Sprinkle them generously with some salt and pepper because
okay.
that's going to really contrast the sweetness. Roast them at about 400 degrees, okay? And when they start to get tender, meaning how big are the chunks?
Oh, about an inch or so.
They're going to cook fairly fast. And I take a pancake turner. You know, one of those metal spatulas, and I slip them under the potato and toss them around every so often because they can stick to the bottom of the pan.
Yeah.
Okay? So the idea is when they start getting brown, that's when you add the maple syrup because you don't want to burn it, but you want to get this gorgeous caramelized glaze. So when they start browning and they're just, you can pierce them, but they're not super duper soft, that's when you toss them with the maple syrup.
Do I drizzle it on, or do I take them out of the pan in a bowl?
No. Just take them. Take the pan carefully with, you know, pot holders or whatever. Put it on a counter, and then drizzle with the maple syrup, and then use that pancake turner to turn them around so they kind of get coated, and then finish them in the oven. And just watch them for burning because, you know, sugar will burn eventually.
Yes.
All right? And that should do it. That should do it.
Thank you so much. Happy Thanksgiving.
And you too. You're going to have fabulous potatoes. It's going to be
wonderful. I'm very excited.
Yeah, you should be. I have got a potato tip, guys. If you are in a great hurry, okay, what you do is thin slice, whatever it is, sweet or white, drop them in boiling water. They're going to cook in 5-10 minutes. Drain them really, really well, and then you can do anything you want with them. You can mash them. You can make salad. You can do anything. You can reach us, 800-537-5252. We have got Harry calling from Ohio. Harry, what's up?
Hey, Lynn. I just found out that I have to have my leg of lamb, actually two of them that I was cooking for Thanksgiving, done a little bit earlier than what I had expected. I was going to grill them, and I'm wondering if there's any way to speed those up.
Are they bone-in right now?
No, I deboned them last night, and I marinated them in a little red wine and spices and lemon juice. And yeah, I was ready to go, but my brother-in-law called and said, hey, the turkey, they're also smoking a turkey, and it's going to be ready a little earlier. So I was wondering, I normally cook on a Holland grill, so it's indirect heat.
Yeah, right.
What anything that I could do that would speed it up but not ruin it?
Okay, the thinner the piece of meat, the faster it cooks. Right?
Okay.
And you don't want to cook it super fast because then it gets tough. So this is what you're going to do. If you've boned that lamb, you're going to cut it so you open it up like a book. And the whole thing is maybe instead of being, you know, the thickness of the leg rolled up, it's much thinner. It's going to cut the cooking time at least by a third, maybe by one half.
Okay.
Okay?
And just do that in indirect heat as well?
Do that with indirect heat. And then the thing you want to do with it is don't go too fast. Because it'll really get tough. So, you know, give it, you know, it's going to be about a third less time, but don't push it too hard because I want to see you get a nice, juicy piece of meat. And the other thing is, remember to tell, is it your brother-in-law or your brother with the smoked
turkey? My brother-in-law.
Your brother-in-law. Tell him that a turkey is at its best when it has rested after cooking at least 30 minutes.
Perfect. I love it. Thank you, Lynn.
So this is very nice to do this favor for your brother-in-law to let your turkey really rest so your brother-in-law doesn't have to cremate his legs of lamb, which he spent a lot of money on and a lot of care.
Family advice as well. Thank you.
You are. Yeah, this is the way we save families. Okay. Hey, have a great holiday. And I love the idea of leg of lamb at this time of year.
Thanks very much.
You take care. Bye.
Bye.
You know, you just never know what you're going to run into. But, you know, when you're in a hurry, anything that gets smaller, you know, like the meat is thinner, the potatoes are thin sliced, it's going to cook a lot faster. So just remember, when you're in a hurry, thin slice it and then cook it however you were going to cook it. And one other thing, one really quick way to do mashed potatoes is call them Parisian crushed potatoes and just crush the lumps with a fork. That's it. You now have a whole potato concept. We have an email from Kyle in Brooklyn. He's putting bacon in Brussels sprouts this year. You want to sauté that bacon really well, then brown the Brussels sprouts. Okay, add some water and you're off and running. Happy Thanksgiving, everybody. Now, you're listening to the Splendid Table's annual call-in program, Turkey Confidential, from American Public Media.
American Public Media.
Glowing hearts, a gentle snowfall, and voices raised in song.
Let each gift of love
remind you that this day the Christ child.
Enjoy an evening of music with six of Central Illinois' best a cappella singing groups.
Chestnuts roasting on an open fire.
Join us for Winter Voices, an a cappella holiday. Wednesday night at 7 on WILL-TV.
WILL programming is made possible by Columbia Street Roastery, offering over 30 varieties and blends of whole bean or ground coffee at 24 East Columbia in Champaign. Coffee, tea, and chai are available from their retail store, in local restaurants, and through Columbia Street Roastery's coffee service. More information is available at 352-9713.
This is Illinois Public Media, WILL 580 AM and 90.9 FM HD3, Urbana.